There's a really cool story about how this show came about. Do you mind sharing it with us?
Oh, sure. I'd love to. Yes. In the fall of 2010, we need to figure out the year, what year was it, my friend, the comedian Lewis Black, who I met after my dad died, he really wanted my husband and I to come on this comedy cruise that he was doing. He got together like 7 comics and was doing all these events on this comedy cruise with 400 hardcore and Lewis Black fans. And so he said to me, well, we need a day event, and I really want you guys to come on board. So, I don't know, just play some videos of your dad and tell a few stories, because he knew I was a storyteller, and I already had a couple of these stories that I did regularly at venues around L.A., and so I was like, oh, okay, sounds good to me. And literally, and I mean the word literally, the morning of the event, I picked, I think it was 9 videos off of 2 or 3 compilation DVDs I had of my dad's stuff, and just put them, you know, in chronological order, and then just started writing down, you know, ideas for stories, some of which I did have, but some of which also I lifted from my dad's memoir, you know, some of that stuff, but just kind of jotted down notes, and just completely winged it that day, like got up there and just played a video, told a story, played a video, told a story. Well, I did like 75 minutes, and the place was laughing and crying, and all the comics were blown away, and everyone kept saying to me all week long, oh my God, I loved your thing, that was so amazing, you should go on the road with it. And so, you know, so I was sitting there going, yeah, right, I'm going to go on the road and talk about my dad for an hour and a half. Like, how obnoxious is that? And then I started telling people about the experience I had, and it was kind of intriguing. And then Paul Provenza, a friend of mine, comedian, actor, director, author, said, you know, this could actually be really interesting if we did it right, and I'd be willing to direct it for you. And I said, well, I think the only way I would ever do it is someone like you would be part of the project. And that was February of 2011, and before I knew it, he had me booked to premiere at the Just for Laughs Festival in Boston.
Feet first, huh?
In July. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I need to get my shit together, and so I did.
How was George Carlin the comedian different from George Carlin the father?
Yeah, my dad wasn't ever a person who was on. I mean, you know, he had his stage thing that he did, and even backstage, he wasn't a guy who was on. But my dad was a really thoughtful, quiet guy at home. We definitely had our share of laughs and, you know, that kind of, you know, there wasn't like jokey jokes going on, and he didn't feel like he needed to entertain me or people. But, you know, there was a lot of play and fun and that kind of stuff. Funny voices, always funny voices going on in the kitchen and stuff like that. But he was like, you know, he was a hands-off kind of dad and a very laissez-faire in most ways. But there were a couple of things that, like, if he felt it was important for me to understand something, then, you know, he took the time to, you know, kind of explain the world to me and stuff. And one example of that is when I was a kid in 1972, the summer of 72, my mom and I went on the road with my dad, and we all went to Kent State. And this was a few years after the shootings on campus there. And mm-hmm. I was about 9 years old, and my dad explained to me, we went to the memorial, he explained what had happened with these kids and what was going on with the protests and all of that, and you know, really wanted me to understand the importance of, you know, free speech and these kids standing up for what they believe in, but also being wary of the government and the government trying to silence us. And so, you know, it was a huge political lesson for this little 9-year-old girl's head to kind of wrap around. But that's the kind of dad he was, you know. It was like he wanted me to get these kind of big, kind of moral understanding of the world at times. And then, of course, we would do silly fart jokes.
the reason why I asked the difference between the two is how do you convey those differences in your show?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, the fun part about my show and the way we've designed it is that because I use videotape of my dad, you get to see the George Carlin on the screen and experience who we all know and love. Oh, he's on Carson. Oh, he's on HBO, So you have that moment as an audience member, and then you come to me, and I tell a story. I have these stories, just like the Kent State one I just told.
Mm-hmm.
I reveal the life we lived together for, the 45 years that I was with my dad, and even a few years before I start the story when my parents met in Dayton, Ohio. And so you get to see the heart and soul of George Carlin. You get to see the human being who's struggling, to feel okay about his career, who's struggling with his wife's alcoholism and his own drug addiction, who's struggling with his daughter, who's trying to find her way in the world and, hasn't quite found her sea legs yet. So you get the 360 degree of him. And that's part, one aspect of why I wanted to do this show is I wanted to give to his fans one more experience with him and an experience that they've never had with him before.
What do you think you've learned from this production and from the touring and being on the road that, you didn't think you had in you? What do you think you've learned as a person and as a performer through this production?
Well, I've learned that I can survive forgetting where the hell I am in my story in front of 200 people. No, I mean, as a performer, I've actually finally gotten stage time. I was a storyteller before. I would do 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there. But when you have a 90-minute show, and I've done it about 25 times now, I'm actually learning to live and breathe on stage. So that's one thing. And learning to kind of be with the material as it evolves and as I evolve, and just learn to kind of what it's like to be a person who travels and does a show. And, there's so much to learn, and I've just been taking it all in like a sponge for 2 years. And personally, what I've learned is that, so much, but I think one of the things that I've learned is, and I tell people this often, I say, if you struggled in your childhood, or, you had a chaotic childhood, or if you struggled at all in your life and was confused and lost and felt like an underachiever and a screw up or whatever it is, whatever your story is, if you go and write and perform a solo show of it, you will be over and done with your personal story in 6 months. Like, you don't need 20 years of therapy, trust me. If you're willing to get on a stage and tell people publicly the amazing journey of your life and where you've been and what you've been through and where you are now, it's like this huge, this burning desire to tell this story my whole life, and this feeling of invisibility, which just comes naturally when you're around someone famous like my father your whole life, it burns away, and you get to find this whole other vista of life, because you're no longer thinking, God, if I could just be seen and heard, then ... And now that I know that I have been seen and heard by myself and by an audience, it's like the whole world has opened up for me now, and I feel like anything is possible for me.
How do you want this production to be ultimately remembered? Let's just say someone sees it now, and a couple of years ago, they're reminiscing, they're talking with a friend about it. How do you want them to really look back on the experience?
I want them to have a deeper but also a broader fondness for my father, to not only just respect him for the intellectual man that he was, the comedian, the mind, the thinker, the communicator, but also for the big heart he had and the soul he had and the human struggle that he went through. And so ultimately I want people to feel that, you know, we're all human, our struggle's all the same, and, you know, that he's this guy that everyone puts on a pedestal, but that, you know, we all struggle with this stuff. And so there's that, you know, and that you can also, you know, coming for me, at least my part of it, which is that, you know, finding your own voice and finding your way is a powerful thing to do. And, I always want to inspire people to find their own voice. And so my journey of finding my voice, I hope, inspires other people to find theirs. And so I hope they find some inspiration from my own story.
Your father has this classic skit where he's just basically talking about kids have way too much structure and they're constantly being rewarded for doing nothing. And, you know, kids basically just need time alone to be by themselves and to daydream. So I'll ask you, did your dad let you daydream as a kid?
Oh, completely, yes. I had no structure in my life. I had negative structure. I could have used a little more structure. So yes, absolutely, I had freedom. And my dad had a lot of freedom as a kid, too, because he was a latchkey kid in the 40s. So he didn't have any structure. And I think, I think it just comes from personal experience. Yes, I was allowed to daydream. I was allowed to do nothing. I had no helicopter parenting going on in my household.